This is part two of the interview on the Freedom Fiends with Phil Warmoth. Not really interview, co-host, friend, collaborator, Biptunia, Worms.
Yeah, he sold dynamite to my dad. I hate saying that on the radio because it's like they're going to, you know, kick in my doors. I don't have any dynamite. My dad was a farmer and bought dynamite from your grandfather to blow tree stumps out when clearing fields. Because back in the day, you could just go in a hardware store and buy that stuff because people weren't as crazy back then, I guess. I don't know.
At least they were quiet about it.
They're quietly crazy. Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. Oh, any hardware store? I mean, you could make really some pretty good guns out of a well-stocked hardware store, you know. It's an interesting thing if you ever Google like improvised weapons in countries where they can't have guns and like some of the weapons people have improvised to fight back against occupying forces. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I have my grandmother's shillelagh that she inherited.
I love that word. That's a cane for beating people in Ireland, right? A shillelagh?
Yeah. That's an improvised weapon right there. Yeah, right in your face. And make them out of this rosewood, I think it's called.
Yeah,
and it's hard. Super, super hard.
Yeah. Wow. Shillelagh.
Someday I'll have a fireplace. So I'm going to hang it over the fireplace.
Someday you'll have a fireplace? I thought you had a fireplace. Yeah. You're in Maine. No. How do you live in the winter? You have to cut open a moose and climb inside it for warmth?
I've done that. Yeah.
No, you haven't.
It's a little cramped. It's okay, man.
Bring the kids.
The accommodations are fine. The room service isn't so good, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's not talk about that other thing. Because, you know, I think now about what I'm going to do and if it's going to harm anyone. And I don't want to harm people, so unless they deserve it. So, yeah, let's not talk about that.
Let's talk about synthetic thoughts.
Ooh, what's that? I like it.
I don't know, but it's I'm working it out, man. So last night I was up working on this piece. So can I read what I have so far?
No.
I can get your input.
Yes.
All right. The synthetic current of abstract, unrefined thought, a force that measures itself in nearly equal quantities of antithesis, archetypes, and graphic idiomatic language, most frequently manifests itself in the surreal world of bad dreams and overly frank bar talk. And then the note for that is Sir Charles Fogbarth from his 1924 treatise on synthetic thought. Got to give the guy props, right?
Yeah.
Stanza two. Existential analyst Hoffman Binsinger theorized that there is the serious potential of losing one's authentic self when engaged in plastic discourse fueled by abject jubilation, punctuated with frequently perceived non-existent backslaps and laughs.
Yeah.
And that was an excerpt from his lecture, The Murder of Modern Language, Schmeldick Institute, Weimar, Germany, December 30th, 1940.
Weimar. The Weimar Republic. What year? Was that in the Weimar Republic?
It was the fictitious year of 1947. I just made it all up.
That was a fictitious year. Yeah, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think anything really happened that year. But I was trying to grasp this idea of
trying to grok
thought.
So is that his term or your term?
Wrestle it down. What's up?
Is that his term or your term? Synthetic thought.
Oh, it's my term. The whole thing's bogus. I made the whole thing up.
Oh, but, I like you know, it.
I started reading an article and. It just got back to the point where it was nonsensical anymore.
Just say Weimar right when you record it. Weimar Republic.
Weimar.
It's a W, but it's Weimar. Yeah. Well, the phrase synthetic thought brings an idea to me, which I don't know if this is anything to do with it, but it might be something to incorporate in here because there's another term, endoceptual thought. Someone explained to me when I was a kid about endoceptual thought. And it was thought that doesn't have any language involved in it. It's only symbols or moods. And the example given is that often people can have memories from before they had language of being, you know, really little, like one or one and a half. Mm-hmm. Or even when you have some language capacity, like let's say, you know, you lived in a house with your parents and they moved when you were three, but you remember the house and you remember that this one room was, you know, purple and off limits. You weren't allowed to go in there, and calm and warm and spooky. And like, you didn't necessarily have words for all those things then. You probably had a word for warm, but you probably didn't have a word for all those other things, but you still remembered it. And then when you had language, you could describe that room when you formed language. And those thoughts, those pre-language thoughts, were stored as endoceptual thought. Now, I've looked this thing up, this phenomena of pre, there's another name for it, a clinical name of, you know, pre-cognitive or pre-verbal thought, I think it is, pre-verbal memories. But the word endoceptual doesn't exist. Like, I've Googled that, and whoever told me this, maybe they read it in a paper that was never published or something, but I really like that word. And that word describes it, endoceptual, you know, concepts of outside the – let's look it up.
Let's see.
Endoceptual. What does endoceptual mean? Oh, huh. Endoceptual. Well, endoceptual is a term. Endoceptual thought. Endoceptual thought is not a term, but endoceptual is a term and does mean things that are formed. Yeah, when you search endoceptual thought, it says, do you mean conceptual thought? Endoceptual is or non-representational states usually have place on the early stages of creative processes such as incubation. Huh. That's a weirdly formed sentence even. But I don't know. Endoceptual might be a word that you could throw in there for the science-y effect.
Yeah.
Endoceptual. I'll send it to you. I'll send you that word. Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows where this thing's going, but I think it, you know, and it's funny that you sent that poem that you wrote for Kip to read, because it's along the same lines.
Yeah.
We're thinking parallelly. Parallelly. Yeah. Is that a word?
Parallelly.
Thinking in parallel.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, the best answer I can get for endoceptual here is on Yahoo Answers, which is non-professionals giving answers. It's kind of like Wikipedia,
Yahoos.
But not as organized.
Bunch of Yahoos.
And it's not checked. Yeah, isn't that weird how that became a huge – that was like one of the first huge internet companies. And now I'm like, they're still around. I used to have a Yahoo email address back in the day. I guess you could still have that. But pretty much now if someone has a Yahoo email address, I think they're old-fashioned. Or actually there's some people – I think the same thing with an AOL address, except there's an exception – there are some attorneys who still have their AOL address just because they were like the first people on with an email address, and they just kept it, you know. So, but Yahoo, how's a big company called, you know, basically stupid redneck? That's what Yahoo means, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Or not even redneck, just hick. It means hick.
Yeah.
My people.
We believe in our people.
We believe ourselves. Oh, we still haven't used that. We've used it as a line, haven't we? But yeah, I believe us. That was it. You said, I believe us.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We believe us.
I do. And I do. I really do.
I have a list of possible record and song names. I should probably read them to you. You probably don't know them all.
Oh, yeah. Do you have that?
Yeah, I'll read it right now. Let's see. The Synths of the Father. Taxation is cruft. I want to make t-shirts say that. Taxation is theft is a common saying among libertarians. Tax it cruft. Do you know the word cruft? It's a weird word. It's a programmer word, computer programmer. It's a word that programmers use for like bad programming or superfluous code. Like, you know, you take 10,000 lines to write something that could be written in 300 lines. That's cruft. So taxation is cruft. The Lucky Worm album, the Lucky Worm sessions, Lucky Worm, Bip Nix from Alpha Centauri. I really liked that, but didn't after a while. I know you like it. It should be a song, but not a record. It's, you know, it's kind of like, do you remember do you ever see The Simpsons where they start an a cappella vocal group? Yeah, it's like Barney and Apu and Principal Skinner and Homer, and they become like, they win a Grammy for best a cappella group. They become famous for a minute. And when they're starting the group, they're like, what should we call ourselves? And someone's like, the principal's like, Well, I think we need a name that's moderately funny at first and less funny every time we hear it, every time people hear it. And someone said, how about the B sharps? And they're like, perfect. And I think that Bipnix from Alpha Centauri is kind of one of those. Like, it's moderately funny the first time you hear it, and it'd be less funny as it goes on. But I'm really behind calling the record, the next record, Fanfare for the Common Worm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're there. We're both there.
Which is a takeoff on a instrumental neoclassical piece called Fanfare for the Common Man, written by Aaron Copland in the 40s, which was he was a communist, and it was kind of like, you know, the one worldy UN type anthem that he wrote. It's a great piece of music, though. And we made a non-commie worm-centric version of it. Actually, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer had a big hit with that song. They played it at the Olympics at some point, opening ceremony in the 70s. Let's see, what else I got? Out of Place Artifact. I kind of like that. And that's a term. That's like something that, you know, conspiracy theories usually often involve an out of place artifact. There's actually one in Maine. You ever heard of the Maine penny?
No.
It's a penny that I think is from like England from the 1700s that was found like buried under a bunch of Norse artifacts from like the year 800 or the year 400 or something, or the year 400 AD BC. I don't know. But it was like Vikings came to that part of Canada and American Canada, and under all their stuff, like a layer below that, they found a penny from like 1800s from England.
Wow.
And it's an out of place artifact because it's like how that time traveling Vikings.
Let's see.
Memory Hog. I kind of like that name. Memory Hog. Memory Hog is basically any program that uses a lot of memory is a memory hog. MIDI Panic. MIDI Panic is MIDI is the interface that I use and everybody uses to make instrumental or to make computer music, music with computer. It's kind of complicated, but it's the interface that we use. MIDI stands for musical interface, musical instrument digital interface, all capital letters, M-I-D-I. MIDI Panic is actually a button that a lot of keyboards have for like, cause sometimes MIDI just kind of runs away into a feedback loop and just becomes really loud. So if you're playing live and that happens, you can hit the MIDI panic button and it just resets everything. And then I thought MIDI panic in Needle Park. Cause you know, the movie Panic in Needle Park is
I've heard of it.
Dustin Hoffman's first movie or his first movie he was known for. And it's like, he plays a junkie in it. It's a horrible movie. It's well made, but it's not fun. And it actually inspired the book. I'm pretty sure it inspired Requiem for a Dream by Selby. Let's see. I think, what else we got? We already did Bippertronics. That's on this list. I guess I could.
Yeah.
Oh, Odd Music for Odd People. Cut-ups and Arps, The Road to Freedom. Test Gear Blues, Test Gear Boogie, The Test Gear Cycles. Graveyard Orbit. I kind of like that one. That's a NASA term or a science-y term for I think it's like when satellites are on their way to crashing and burning up, they're in the graveyard orbit. Like they're not where they should be. They're lower. Yeah. Odd Music for Weird People. We Believe Us. I Believe Us. That's all I got. Yeah.
I came up with something similar one time. Can you hold on just a second,
man? Yeah, man. Hang on. So we got this new song called Sorry for Your Audio Loss, which is about I wanted to write a poem about lost files because I've lost 3 files on computers in, 25 years of computing. And it's maddening to lose them and not have a backup. So, yeah, I wrote a song about it. We wrote a song about it. And then I wrote another song that's like the same music slowed down and so different that you didn't even recognize it as the same music. And I think people won't.
I didn't. Yeah, that blew my mind.
Yeah, it's the same, not even just the same chords or anything. It's like the same music cut and pasted and then just slowed down. And with MIDI in a digital audio workplace, is that DAW? A DAW, the program I make music in. Cubase is the DAW I use. You can, in a DAW, you can always like reassign the voices. So you can have a bunch of notes played and they can be playing on a piano or you can make them play on synthesizer or on guitar or drums or anything. So I just reassigned to different synths. So it sounded very different. And it's like one version's like 170 beats a minute and one's like 50 beats a minute. It's like a third, less than a third of the speed. Yep.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that at all.
I think it's going to be the first and last song on the record. I think the fast one is going to be the first song. I don't know. Whichever one's got more catchy melody, I'll decide. But yeah.
So, you know, that brings up something too, because I was listening to some old vinyl last night.
Ooh.
The whole like strategy of constructing an album is so different now, because I think I was listening to Zeppelin Presence, and you know, the first song on the first
record
side, and the first song on the
Achilles
slot,
Last Stand,
just for the drumming alone, man. Yeah. But so the first, the two strongest songs were on the beginning of each side, where now, like, we don't have that anymore. So I'm always fascinated by how you decide to weave the songs together. I know you have a, you know, always have something in mind about where, like, the placement of the songs on the album.
And then sometimes,
how does that, I mean, is it different for every album?
Or
do you have kind of a formula?
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important, because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agoristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agoristhosting.com.
Hey, have you heard about Cell 411? It's this great free app that allows you to set up public and private cells so that you can reach out to people like friends, family, and neighbors at the touch of a button in case of emergencies, instead of relying upon the monopolized services of government. Because, well, let's face it, the response time for those services is often less than stellar. But Cell 411 allows you to have real-time chat, also provides turn-by-turn directions to your exact location, and gives you the option to stream live video of the situation you're dealing with so that the members of your cell know exactly what's going on. Also, that video is then stored on the Cell 411 servers so that in case something happens to your phone, say someone tries to take it from you or break it, well, that video is safely stored and you can retrieve it at a later date. Cell 411 also has an awesome ride-sharing app that allows you to connect with people to give rides or get rides, and doesn't limit you in payment options because, well, you can work out a deal with anything, including barter with your driver. And Cell 411 doesn't store any of that information and doesn't take a cut. They're just there to provide the connection between you and your potential ride or ridee. Cell 411 can be found on the Google Play Store or on iTunes or at getcell411.com.
Not only are there not sides now with most commercial music, there's not even necessarily albums now. I mean, for a while, you know, when CDs came out, it really kind of opened up people's ability, because vinyl, you're limited to about, what is it, 54 minutes, I think, or 49. Yeah. And if you get longer than that, you can go longer than that on an album, but the audio quality goes down. And on a CD, you can fit about 72 minutes of music, and you can go up to about 75 or 78, but then you risk it not playing on some, you know, so 72 is pretty much the limit on CDs, which is, you know, it's like a quarter to a third again as long as there, you know, it's a much long, it's a really good format. You know, a CD. But the thing was, too, a lot of bands, when CDs came out, you could you could do what you couldn't do with albums, which was continue the music without flipping it over. And that was actually possible right. in the '70s because they had reel to reel tapes, but they were really expensive and difficult to use for most people. And not a lot of people had them. Like audiophiles had them. And really, you know, you could put 2 hours on a tape, but you had to suffer audio quality. You had to slow the tape down. So, you know, CDs were the first time there was really a really high quality format that was continuous and longer than a vinyl record without having to stop and flip it. But a lot of bands and singers didn't really take to that because when CDs happened, music was kind of in this slump. It was like all bad pop music. So what CDs usually were like one or two hits or one or two songs they worked kind of hard on and then an hour of filler. You know, and then actually illegal file sharing kind of saved the record industry because the record industry was kind of dying at that point. I mean, a lot of what happened on CDs originally was just reissues of like, you know, vinyl records that people had on the new format. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all that much new stuff. So what happened with Napster and then later with other file sharing things was people got into just songs like people wouldn't generally mm-hmm. download the whole album because the internet was a lot slower back then. Bandwidth, memory, things were, you know, you had to like pick what you really wanted and people would generally just get the hits by a band or the mm-hmm. really good songs yeah. and collect, you know, and then the iPod came out and people could have, you know, 100 songs by, you know, 2 songs each, 3 songs each by 30 or 50 bands, only their best songs. And mm-hmm. so, and then then iTunes, the store, started up and started selling singles and kind of revitalized the music industry. And all of a sudden people were, you know, like people would rather pay 99 cents for one song than pay, you know, $14-$15 for 2 good songs and then a bunch of filler. So that did right. revitalize yeah. the music industry. But I'm bringing back albums. I mean, there's other people that do it. But a lot of people that do it for a strategy too. There's actually a thing now where rappers, where hip hop is doing, mm-hmm. a lot of them are doing albums that are like double album length, like one album that's like, 90 minutes or something. But the reason they're doing it isn't necessarily a commercial, an artistic reason. It's a commercial reason because of the way that, streaming plays of an album are counted toward a gold record. You know, so they're like, they're more likely to get a gold record if they put out 90 minutes of music, you know, even if the people only really like the first 3 songs or something. So that's, but I do try to really sequence the albums. I work as hard as that as I do at that as I do on making the music. And yeah, I mean, I finish the songs, I get them completely mixed till they're, you know, stereo masters, 24 bit, 16, 24K, 16-bit stereo masters. And then I just kind of move them around in an editing program to try to – well, I usually have an idea of like the first song and maybe the last song or usually the first song. I start with the first song and then I basically write a list of them. And it's kind of process of elimination. I go like – I usually play the last 10 seconds of the first song and then go through and say like, okay, of the 8 songs I have left, 3 of these could follow that. And then I figure out mm-hmm. which is the best one to do that. And then sometimes I have to write like little bits of interstitial music to make them bridge when there's really not a bridge or mm-hmm. often they just stop and go and the other one starts immediately, which a lot of records don't do because in vinyl, people had to be able to find the wide grooves right. to be able to find the song. And that's not an issue anymore. So I really like a song to go generally right into the other. And sometimes I'll have 2 or 3 seconds of silence tops, but on records it was generally 5 seconds. And then sometimes I'll fade one out and fade the other in. I mean, basically Dark Side mm-hmm. of the Moon is my template for all this. Dark Side of the Moon, Sgt. Pepper's, you know, We're Only in It mm-hmm. for the Money by Frank Zappa or Freak Out by Frank Zappa. Like the music I listened to as a kid, the early concept records, I really mm-hmm. liked listening to the whole record. Brian Eno, I really liked how they flowed. So yeah, that's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Though I like the, we're not generally tied to a concept, but concepts emerge.
I know.
And I think it's kind of that. And I think it's the puzzle pieces, the way they fit together, the way you.
Yeah. I mean, Dark Side of the Moon isn't about the moon. It's about like alienation and modern life, but that's the concept of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, our our record, Bippertronics, is about my cat, Bipcat. Not really.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That in you know, I think it's a great commentary on where music is going, or at least where we're taking it. I don't know what the 8% think about.
What is the 8%? You use that term today. Who are the 8%? The
8%. Yeah, that was something that you
sociopaths.
Came up with. We were exchanging emails, talking about something to do with this album, and I mentioned something kind of half in jest. It was in poor taste, and you were good enough to remind me that, you know, we're going to alienate people saying things like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then you said, well, you know, you're going to alienate the 8% of the people that actually listen to us.
No, I said you're going to alienate like 80% of the 8% that actually listen to us. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So
that's funny.
I'm not a big fan of bumper stickers, but I think that would be great.
The 8%.
Have that little 8%. Just stick it on the bumper, you know, like with those oval stickers that, you know, I don't even know what they mean half the time.
Yep. Oval stickers are what hipsters use. I actually had an idea for an ebook today. I might actually write. So have you ever seen a daily affirmations book, like a self-help or recovery book?
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like the days of the year. It's like, you know, January 1st. And each one is a page, 365 pages. They're usually really little. Or sometimes they'll be like two on a page if they're short. You know, so you open it up and you're looking at 4 days or something. So it's 150 pages. But they're usually little books, like 4 by 5 inches, that like people sit on the back of the toilet to just pick up and read. And they're really common with people in recovery. And Jamie from Vantana Row, actually, like, he had his parents, his mother had them in the house. Like, he's very familiar with them. And I've been giving them a lot of advice. Like, I'll just give him golden stuff. Like, I think it's golden, but stuff he'd never think of. Like, I called him yesterday and he didn't answer. And I went to leave a message, and his message was like, "Hi, you've reached," he's just joking, like, "Hi, you've reached Jamie from Vantana Row. Leave him." And I left a message. I said, "Hey, call me back when you can. Nothing pressing. Just want to chat. But you should probably change your answering machine message, because, you know, you're trying to get opportunities in the world. You're weird as it is. Do you really have to be weird on your answering machine message? Like, someone is going to call and want to hire you for something and hear that message and go, nope, just hang up, not leave a message." Okay. And so I called back tonight and got his message, and it was like, "Hello, this is Jamie." It was very professional. It wasn't square. It was still him. But, you know, like, that kind of stuff. I'm thinking of making a book called Vantana Road Daily Affirmations by Michael Dean, like year a day, page a day calendar or something, you know. And like every day I'll have some life tip of me telling them how to live, but publish it. Yeah. Yep.
It's got possibilities.
And cross promotion too, because, you know, they could throw it at people on the street.
Yeah.
Well, they could easily throw it. They could just put it on their website on a page, and then they could have a QR code for it, and they could just put it on a piece of wood, like duct tape it to a piece of wood and throw the wood at people's feet. So what else, man?
Poetry.
Well, so that doesn't get written. I want to hear about that.
Yeah. So, all right. So I'm sure you've gone through.
Get up on the mic, son. This is for posterity. Yeah.
For prostation.
Yes. Prostate yourself to the process.
So I never seem to, you know, have problems coming up with a concept of a poem, but following through sometimes can be painful. And I went through this long period where I couldn't complete one poem. So to alleviate my symptoms of the writer's block, I came up with a poem of all the poems I haven't written. So here we go. So so I debuted this poem at an open mic at a book sale, and it was super loud and people weren't really even listening. But this one seemed to get people's attention. So it's just a list of poems I've never written. Cliche to eternity. Yeah. Aunt Leona the cat. Inside Out Lady. So I gotta explain that one. So I've been a teacher.
Is it radio friendly?
Years now.
For how long? How long have you been a teacher?
Very, very much so. 18 years, wow. Going on 19.
Wow.
And I worked with a group of students that had severe anxiety. So it got to the point where I was ready to take a student out into public for the first time, you know, to try to get them acclimated to it. And so I thought, well, why not go to Walmart, right? So I said, well, we'll go in the garden section. We'll ease our way in. And it was like a car wreck, you know, like you see it happening, but there's just nothing you can do. So there was this woman standing in front of the garden section there, and she's talking to herself, you know, not loudly, not animated or anything. And so I was just kind of hoping to brush by her a little bit. And she stopped us, and she started telling us her whole life story about how her boyfriend left her and turned her life inside out, and that's why all her clothes were inside out. And the
probably
poor guy
she talked to her house. Oh, he had a panic attack, man.
Yeah, he had a panic attack. It was bad. So then we never went out in public again. It just kind of backfired on me. It was a bad thing. So that was the inside out lady. This one I like a lot. Small toe of the universe. The small toe of the universe. Dueling Buddhas. Yeah. That could be a good
like
name
it.
For a band.
Yeah.
Right? Dueling Buddhas.
There's a band.
Fake Memories.
There's a band in Charlottesville called Rude Buddha. Did you ever hear them? Friends of mine.
No.
Back in the day, like in the 80s. Too. Good name. Rude good band.
Buddha. Yeah. I like that.
Yep.
Fake Memories. I'm sure you know somebody who you're telling a story back in the day, and someone who wasn't even there inserts themselves into the story like they were there. And I'm like, really? Come on. That's not cool.
Yeah. Oh, do you ever meet a congenital liar? There was a kid in Westfield did that. Like, you know, it was like a disease, man. It was creepy. It was, you know, I tested him one time. I wasn't messing with him. I was just testing it because I thought, mm-hmm. is that really what he's doing? Because it seemed like he lied all the time. Like, right. He always had to be involved. And, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. I said, what'd you do over Thanksgiving? And he's like, oh, I went to my grandma's house. And I said, no, you didn't. I went over to your house and looked in the window, and you were there the whole day. And he's like, okay, yeah, I did. That's what happened. And he was totally serious, you know.
And there's the thing, too, where people tell two good stories. Like, you can tell that they've been practicing them other places. And you know, when you get the final product, it's just – you don't want to tell a story that's too good, you know. Let's see. What else do we have here? Saturday Chance. That's a thing in Maine. I never heard of it before.
Saturday Chance?
I don't know
Chance?
What happens. I saw a sign on a telephone pole. Saturday Chance. I don't know what that means. I may have to
on a telephone pole. Well, it could be a movie. I remember in L.A. I used to see all the time signs, you know, like that would just have the name, like a name that sounded like a movie you've never heard of, and an arrow. And it was for, like, you know, the crew to go find – This is before cell phones, like to find the movie where they were filming. Wow. But I've seen it other places.
That's cool.
You know, I've seen it like, I don't know, places where there's colleges where they're probably film students or something. Yeah.
Yeah. There's someone around here. I imagine it being this like 90-year-old guy who's really creepy. He puts these signs, you know, like on the telephone pole that say hell, and then it has a big arrow pointing down and stuff like that. Yeah, I like that.
There's a guy.
Go ahead.
I was going to say. Yeah. There's a guy in our town that used to put really scary, dire Bible quotes on the side of his house, like right next to an elementary school. Nice. You know, like you'd walk by and it would say, like, the wages of sin is death. And then it would say, you know, something about, like, he who lieth with another man's wife. It would just really, like, dire. Wow. Like kids need to see that, I guess he thought, but I thought it was kind of crass. Yeah.
You know the tradition about going to a hotel or motel room and leaving a dollar in the Bible?
In the Bible. Is that to get people to read the Bible? One? No,
it's just something like if you're down and out, you know, at least you always like
oh,
first
for luck?
Thing I always do is I always go to the Bible. Yeah. So there's a poem titled that I've never written called No Dollars in the New Believer's Bible. It's really disappointing when that happens.
So is this something people do to get luck from God, or what is it? I don't get it. Dollar.
I just think it's kind of like this tradition.
Dollar. I'm Googling it.
Help out the down and
it
out.
Autofilled. Yeah, it said dollar in a, and it said hotel Bible. Yeah. This is a thing. Fact check. Money and Gideon bar. They leave Snopes.com debunked something about this. So the rumor of dollar bills, legend, money is sometimes left in Gideon Bibles by Christians looking to reward the next tortured soul who turns to the good book for solace. Let's see whether this is true or not. I don't know. This is a user generated one. So it doesn't really say if it's true. They haven't confirmed it, but yeah. I don't know. Don't know, man.
Yeah.
I never seen it. Have you seen it?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. I make it a point to do it every time.
I think it's to get people to open the Bible and maybe they'll read it. Could be. That's my guess.
Yeah.
They're bribing people. Yeah.
Right. Let's see. What else? One for the heckler. I'm sure you've had hecklers before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was doing this open mic at this local bar called The Thirsty Whale, and it's 9 o'clock at night on a Wednesday night. The only people there are like drunken fishermen who just don't want to hear anything. And so this guy was just, he was messed up. And I realized I didn't have anything. Like I needed something. I needed something to like fire back at the guy. So I've been working on that. 14 firsts.
I had a heckler in England at a bar called Bukowski's. I forget what town in England it was, but it was named after the American poet. And it was I was there showing my movie DIY or Die and giving a little talk and doing a Q&A. And it was really successful show. I mean, it was like – it was weird too because most of the places I showed that movie, it was like, you know, young people, hipsters, artists, whatever. And this was like a few of them, but it was like the usual bar crowd. But they were really, really wrapped with the movie and really into the Q&A. And it was like people of all ages. It was just the community came out for this film in this little small town at the pub. And there was one guy who just kept yelling and being like, well, you're from America and what's wrong with America? I'll tell you. Like just being an idiot. And everyone in the bar, like 70 out of 100 people were going, sit down and shut up, Barry. Like everyone. It was the town drunk, you know, was my heckler basically. Oh, no. Barry at Bukowski's. Yeah. Oh, and he actually really liked it, you know, like he's one of those people like, I love you, you know, like, okay, if you really love me, shut up and sit down, man, you know.
Right. Well, there's a Barry in every bar, right?
Barry in every bar. Hey, add that to your list. I think that should be a poem. A love poem that never was. Every bar has its Barry. Fate. What is it?
Yeah, every bar. I'm going to write that down.
That could be the name of the show. Every bar has it.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Moving along here. What do we got? Elvis Penny.
Huh.
Elvis Penny.
I can see it.
Yeah. There's a big debate about whether they want to continue making pennies because it actually costs more than
costs 2.5 cents to make them. Yeah.
So we can spend the money.
There's actually pennies actually have lobbyists now too. Like
really?
Yeah. Like there's millions of dollars a year spent on convincing Congress to not stop making pennies. And it's not like they have to keep funding them. They just want them to not pass a law ending them.
Right.
Because the copper people make a lot of money. The copper people make a lot of money on it. Yeah.
Drunken stuck up lushes.
Yeah.
Barry could qualify.
A lot of those in Charlottesville, actually, at UVA that I met.
Psychedelic car wash. Do you guys have one of those?
It's not very psychedelic. I mean, I guess when you're in your car and the colors of – yeah, there are different colored liquids they squirt on your car. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's it, man. That's it. Yeah, you get in there and you turn up the radio as loud as you can get it and just enjoy the show. It's great. I love it.
Oh, like a laser show. I turn off the radio and enjoy the sound of the washers because they're rhythmic. To me, that's kind of musical. Yeah.
For your listening and
dancing, enjoyment. Dancing and dining pleasure. Yes. Bring a taco with you in there. Tap your foot
smoke butts out of the ashtray. It's great.
Ew.
Great stuff. Let's see. Boondoggle Dreams. Remember Boondoggle?
That sounds like a movie.
Did you ever make that?
What's boondoggle? That's a cluster F, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like those. Well, actually,
a quandary,
it's literally what it is.
A quagmire?
It can be. I think it's come to be known as that. But in the beginning, it was these two little vinyl strips that look like shoelaces. And you weave them together and you make like keychain.
A boondoggle. So, oh, like at summer camp?
Yeah. That crap?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Ballad of Kip the Chicken. And I wrote that before I met Kit.
The Battle of Kip the Chicken?
The Ballad of
Ballad. Kip
the Chicken.
So, oh, I'm looking at boondoggles.
So you know he's going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
gotcha.
I Googled, Google imaged boondoggle. I used to do something sort of similar. I used to make pot holders. Do you ever see that? Like you get this little, it's another like craft that kids can do that doesn't take a lot of talent. I mean,
I know
actually,
what you mean.
Yeah.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN or virtual private network from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
It had like a square plastic thing with teeth on it.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to make those for probably 4 years and give them away to everybody at Christmas. Like that was my Christmas present. Oh. I would make, you know, 20 of those and I'd give a couple of them to everybody. I'm like, and I'm thinking like how many people probably actually use them though. It's kind of funny too. Like everyone needs them and no one has them. Actually, we use big gloves now. We have big like fireproof gloves that we use that are great that we use for taking stuff out of the oven. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of a bachelor problem right there. Like people that have an apartment and cook once in a while and don't have the things to really do it. Like, you know, they put the turkey in, they're like, how do I get it out? It's burning hot. And they end up using, I don't know, pliers and breaking the container. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, those missing life skills, you know.
Boondoggle is also a verb. This kind of fits for the craft. Boondoggle, to do work of little or no practical value, to merely keep or look busy. Wow.
Oh, that's harsh. That's harsh, man.
Yeah. Well, boondoggles.
You were doing.
Well, boondoggles and my first craft, which was the potholder. It's really easy to just do it, but you could actually get really creative with either. You know, you could weave patterns into either. I'm looking at some of these. The boondoggles, here's like someone's made pot leaves out of boondoggles. Someone's made a Darth Vader keychain head. Someone's made a corkscrew that kind of looks like a worm with tentacles. Like this, it looks like someone's making like fishing lures out of them too. They're pretty neat. There's a bird. There's a dove. There's a bracelet. Yeah.
Nice. The possibilities are endless, man.
Yes. So, what's the redemption in the third act? Do you got more? Do you got a couple more here? Or is that it?
I got a few more.
Just rattle through them.
Past an itch.
Yeah. Past what?
Past an itch.
I am.
Like, have you ever had an itch? It itches I'm so past. Bad. It's beyond. Yeah, beyond itch.
I got one for you. Too tired to go to sleep. That's me often. Yeah, like when I'm working on something and I'm way past my bedtime and I'm exhausted and I don't want to sleep. And I finally just go, I have to sleep. And then I'm too tired to do too tired to brush my teeth, too tired to like turn on my CPAP machine, too tired to, you know, peel back the bed. I almost just want to collapse in my clothes on top of the bed. But, you know, I make myself do some of that stuff at least, but I'm just too tired to go to bed. Yeah.
Yeah.
You see the picture I sent you? Can you check an email? I sent you a great picture of my cat, of our cat, Biptunia. Bippy, the Biptunia logo cat, sitting next to a calendar with a cat on it that looks a lot like her. And it's amazing that she stayed there long enough for me to grab the phone in the other room and take this picture. And it's going to be the picture for this radio episode.
Oh, that's hot. Wow. That is cool.
I mean, it looks like the same cat 10 years apart, but it's not. You can tell by the blaze on her head is a different length, but it really looks like her. And she just jumped up there. She never goes up. She rarely goes up on the sink and she never goes right there. She just jumped up next to that. My wife was cooking something and I just looked over and I'm like, oh my God. I said, like, entertain her and get her not to jump, because she tends to jump off things as soon as she gets on them. And somehow, man, I snapped the picture and she jumped. Like, it's a little blurry. She's about to jump. You can see her almost starting to move. Yeah. Bipcat. Yeah,
she's speaking of animals. Impressions of a dead dog.
Aw.
So that was that was a weird thing.
I don't like it.
Well,
go ahead.
The story is what happened was I had a student who just everything was going wrong for her. It was Christmas time. Her husband's boat sunk and all this stuff.
Married 12-year-old.
Not a high school.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So in the middle of all this stuff, her dog died, and so she couldn't even afford to take it to the vet to you know have it taken care of. So I jumped in my truck along with my boss, and we went to go. We called the vet. The vet was cool. Said bring it in. I'll take care of it. So it had been snowing, and we could barely get up into this place. It was way out in the middle of nowhere. And they put the dead dog in this old abandoned vehicle in the back field, and it was frozen solid. And so I picked it up and I put it in the bed of my truck, which was filled with snow. Took it to the vet, got it taken care of. But after that happened, it froze. Like, we got kind of a sleetish kind of thing. And so the impression of that dog was in the bed of my truck for like a month.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
It wasn't cool.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's see. Auxiliary Sunday. That's actually become a poem. That was that.
I like that. Oh, we did that. We did that poem.
Yeah.
That's a song. Yeah. Yeah. I like that one.
And then the last one is Poem I Have Written.
Poem I Have Written. Are you gonna take the song off it that you did, or does it stay on the songs you didn't do?
Oh, no. It stays. Yeah.
Okay. Because in the truth of when you wrote it, you hadn't done it. Yeah.
Right. True.
Yeah.
So I actually, yeah.
Do you like the, that's cool. It's cool, man. You should do something with it. You should do that one. We'll do that one. Record it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Will you do it this weekend?
I can do it this
weekend. Yeah. And then record Kip doing two things, and then we'll have an album almost.
Yeah.
We have 37 minutes of music for the new album. That's a half an album probably.
I don't know why, but I feel like this came together really fast.
Yeah. Well, actually I think it may have be taking longer than some of them, but I'm not in a hurry this time. You know what? Mm-hmm. It's really good for Biptunia that I'm managing the kids, you know, the Vantana Row, because then I'm not bothering you. Like, we got to do something, Phil. Cause I'm making them do stuff, and they're into it. They need direction more than you. You know, they're living in a van. Yeah. You've solved that 30 years ago. You're not living in a van.
And actually, I'm like, I don't write well under pressure. And
we
were just cranking out stuff so fast. And now it's kind of like more organic for me. Like, you know, something will just work in my head, and then it'll manifest
it. I've gotten more comfortable too at doing solo stuff. I wasn't that confident about it when this started. I mean, I've done recorded a lot of solo music in my life, but I think there's a higher bar for Biptunia that we've formed. And, you know, but now I can do my own one. Yeah. Did you like the artwork I made for Sorry for Your Audio Loss?
Yeah.
It's a bunch of sympathy cards, and in the middle of it, like a file missing icon. Yeah. It's, and I did put in it, you know, we're not trying to insult anybody who's had any loss. We've had loss, but
no,
you know, that's new for me. Like I said, is like trying not to hurt people. You know, a lot of people want to hurt people. Although I have no problem hurting people emotionally that hurt other people. I'll do it. I'll go there. You know, someone's got to do it. But yeah, I try to bring good into the world. So on that note, on the note of I do horrible things for good. On the note of I try to do right. Let's wrap it up here and say Worms, my brother. It's been a good show.
All right. Worms, my friend.
Worms.
Hey, I saw your t-shirt from across the room. That's pretty cool.
Thanks. I looked all over for t-shirts with designs and sayings that define my unique taste, and I finally found it.
Who makes them?
Wormshirts.com.
Wormshirts.com?
Yeah, Wormshirts.com.
That's weird. Why'd they call it Wormshirts.com?
Probably because Wormshirts.com is easy to remember. Worm, like the critter that crawls on the ground, and shirts, like what they are, t-shirts.
Wormshirts.com. Cool. Do they make them for women?
Yeah, they have men's, women's, and children's styles, a bunch of colors, and all sizes, and they're quality cotton shirts.
I'll look up Wormshirts.com right now on my phone and check it out. Wow, they have lots of designs. I've never seen any shirts like these.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Hey, let's get out of here. We'll go over to my place and I'll order some shirts on Wormshirts.com. Then when they arrive, I'll try them on for you.
Worms!
That's wormshirts.com.